Welcome to the Faith is Not Blind podcast. My name is Sarah Devenier, and today I'm talking to Janice. And one of the reasons that I wanted to interview her is because in some of the research that we've done and a lot of the interviews that we've done, the issue of church history has come up again and again. And I thought it would be helpful to have a historian who has loved church history, loved history in general, talk to us about her faith and how learning about church history actually enhances her faith. So welcome, Janice.
Thank you.
I'm really glad you're here.
It's good to be here.
First of all, could I have you give a little bit of your personal background and then we'll work up to your academic background?
Okay. I grew up in California in the Bay Area. I went to BYU as an undergraduate, and then, I just transitioned into my academic background, I suppose. But I served a mission in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, in the North Mission. And I had always thought that my plan was to go to law school. I kind of felt like my skill set, and if I wanted to make any money, that was probably a good way for me to go.
Right.
But I came back from my mission. Both of my mission presidents were both attorneys, and I loved them both, but came back and didn't want to go to law school anymore. And so was floundering a little bit, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And actually figured out what I wanted to do the week before I was supposed to graduate. So I already
just in the nick of time.
I had to beg them to not make me graduate. I had planned to take a year off, and I thought, I'll take the GRE and I'll take the LSAT, and I had a job lined up, and I'll just, figure out what I want to do. But I kind of had this epiphany the week before I was supposed to graduate, and right in conjunction with the epiphany, talked to the graduate director of the history program, the history master's program at BYU, who had been impossible to get a hold of, and he magically answered his phone for once. And I decided that I wanted to do history. And I had not taken a history class at BYU. I was a political science major, so it wasn't, completely beyond the scope. Yeah. But I felt really strongly. I'd had a professor, Stephen Robinson was my religion professor. I took a number of classes from him after I came home from my mission. And he had said, have you ever thought about doing church history?
Yeah.
And I hadn't. I grew up in California where seminary was a calling. It was not a job. I didn't, I hadn't ever really considered that. But amongst the other options, that was kind of, I was mulling that over in my head. And then it suddenly was very clear to me that that's what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And so I went and begged them, even though I walked and looked like I had graduated, I begged them not to make me graduate so I could take some history prerequisite classes to start to be prepared for a master's degree. And then I moved into the master's degree at BYU. Yeah.
Let me ask you something. When you talk about just it feeling right to go into history, how would you describe that? How did you know, and did it have anything to do with any earlier testimonies that you had?
Yeah, definitely. I think we all, we figure out how the Spirit speaks to us individually. And I think it's something that's difficult because it's unique for each of us.
Yeah.
I had growing up, I think that 90% of the time when people talked about feeling the Spirit, they would quote Doctrine and Covenants 9.
Yeah.
And a burning in the bosom or a stupor of thought. Like, those are the only options. And I had never felt something that I would describe in that way.
Right.
Since that time, I have, read President Oakes saying, I have never felt something I would describe in that way. And that gave me great solace, that I'm not alone. But I only ever kind of, someone gave a talk on personal revelation and this is how it comes. Yet I had had my own experiences that I would describe very differently.
Right.
Joseph talks about pure intelligence flowing onto you, like, and that makes sense to me. That right. I can feel. And sometimes I think I get very emotional. Sometimes the spirit makes me hyper. So I feel the spirit in a lot of different ways. Yeah. And learning to recognize, okay, this is what the spirit is.
Yeah.
When you're a missionary, you're trying to get people to recognize the spirit. And that's a really difficult task because we all experience it differently.
Yeah.
I may recognize that someone else is feeling the spirit, but I don't know exactly what they're feeling.
Yeah.
And so I think all of us have to, you know, and for me, it was kind of that progression. There were different points when I received answers. My answer to go on a mission was one of those times. I was going to turn 21. It was 21 then in January, and it was my junior year at BYU. And all fall semester, I prayed and tried to get to know if I should go on a mission. And it never felt right. It didn't feel right saying no, and it didn't feel right saying, yeah, I'm going. And I just decided, okay, I should go to another semester and I'll figure it out next summer. And then right before Thanksgiving, and I think this is a pattern for me figuring out what I want to do with my life, but this set that pattern. And I think that that's also another important thing for us to recognize, that the Lord will speak to us in a way that we're going to understand. And sometimes those patterns are repeated in our lives.
Yeah.
Quite often, the pattern that was set up with my mission is how I get answers.
Right.
I struggle with something for a long time, and then I get an answer very quickly. And with a mission, I woke up on a Sunday morning and I knew I needed to go on a mission. And this was the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And I went and I was in a Relief Society presidency at the time, or we had a meeting with the bishop, and he's talking about, you know, what different callings we needed for the next semester. And I said, yeah, I think you need to fill my calling.
Yeah.
And he said, what's going on? I'm like, and I think a friend that was sitting next to me said, oh no, you don't want to change your mind on this.
Yeah.
But it came, and that day I talked to him and I got my papers, which were physical papers. And I called my parents and I told them I was going on a mission and I was cutting my hair. And my mom said, you need to think about cutting your hair. But I remember lying in bed that night going, crap, like, what if I don't feel this in the morning? Like, what am I going to do if I don't still feel this tomorrow?
Mm.
And the only way I went to sleep was kind of telling myself, okay, you can undo these things you've done. You know, it's going to be okay. But that has kind of set a pattern for
yeah.
me. And figuring out what I wanted to do in terms of a career. And that moment has been really important to me. I remember that spring I was taking a couple of those history prerequisite classes. And I remember, I love spring at BYU because everything's really green and it's also really quiet. Like, you can actually have quiet moments on campus. And I remember walking on campus and just feeling that feeling again and getting that reiteration that, yes, this is the right thing. And I have needed, because my route has been rather circuitous over the last several years, the last decade now, I have needed that to remember that.
Yes.
And I think that as mortals, we forget really easily. Like, you know, children of Israel have an issue with forgetting. We have an issue with forgetting.
Yeah.
That's part of, we pass through the veil of forgetfulness on our way into mortality, and that's always going to be hard for us.
Yes.
And maybe that's something that is attractive to me about history,
right.
is that I believe that we don't, you know, perfectly replicate the past, but that we have opportunities to learn from the past. I think the past can help teach us about ourselves.
Yeah. And what I love about that and the whole story, what you use the word pattern. So the pattern for you might be different from the pattern from somebody else. And that is very historical. we can't assume that our present will repeat the past. And so I think you establishing that pattern of knowing how the Lord speaks to you before you chose to go into history helped you know how to deal with church history, which is very beautiful. Sometimes a circuitous path can actually be helpful and beneficial. So when you decided to go into church history, how have you dealt with some of the difficult issues? Because there are difficult issues.
Yeah, and I think anything, you know, if you grow up in the church, you have kind of a primary version of church history where everything fits into nice, neat little boxes with bows on top.
Yeah, which I think is good for primary children.
Right.
When you teach primary children, that's age appropriate, right?
Yeah, it's age appropriate. The problem is, I think, that too often we never progress on from that. And I think that some of the fault is with kind of how our learning has been structured in church or also in CS and seminaries and institutes. But I think also some of it is also on us that we are not putting forth that effort to get to a point where we have a more mature understanding.
So when would you say that you started to have that more mature understanding, and did it mostly come from you seeking it out?
I actually think that scripture classes, particularly Stephen Robinson was a really important mentor for me, but I read his Believing Christ book illicitly on my mission. My grandma sent it to me.
You're such a rebel.
Yeah, it was, and it was actually at a really critical time for me spiritually. I think that I was trying to save myself. I kind of always thought that if I worked just a little bit harder, I would never have to repent. I would never have to, to go through that pain. I could just avoid that altogether. And mortality doesn't work that way. And sin is actually, an important part of mortality. It's experiencing and repenting and being changed by the process. You know, the point of mortality is not just for us to go from A to B in the quickest way possible. And I think Robinson kind of opened me up to thinking about the gospel and thinking about grace in a very different way than I had before. And so when I heard that I could take classes from him at BYU, I was really excited. And but his classes were, I think, a really important blend that I have tried to emulate of the academic and the spiritual. And those classes really opened up for me dealing with some of the ambiguity in the gospel. And just learning to think about scripture more deeply also is going to bring some difficulties. And that, I think, prepared me to think about the history of the church in a different way. One of my best friends went on a mission to Kirtland at the same time that I went to Argentina. And we both took a church history class afterwards from someone who told really fantastic stories. But my friend said, yeah, we're not allowed to tell that story. And not so allowed. I kind of, as I was in this class and hearing these really great stories, there was always kind of this little, my friend saying, yeah, maybe it's a little more complex than that. And so I think that those things kind of prepared me to deal with a much more mature but a much more complicated narrative.
Well, and I think it's interesting, there are echoes of how you felt on your mission with thinking, I need to save myself, I need to do everything myself because I need to have this pristine, perfect record, which is kind of what we expect about history. So discovering that in yourself and that sometimes it's actually good to work through difficulty could help you when you started looking at church history as well.
Yeah, and I think a critical moment for me. So after I finished my master's degree, I changed my thesis topic rather late in the process. And so it
there's a theme here.
Yes, yes, it's that pattern again. And that should make me not so frustrated with it when I'm in the middle of it, but it doesn't. I finished kind of a little late in the year, and I was going to have a year before I could move on to a PhD program. And I needed a job. I had done an internship at the Church History Library, and Ron Walker, actually, who was a history professor at BYU, but I'd never had a class from him, needed a research assistant. And I had an interview with him. I felt like it went pretty well. He was working on, he told me, Brigham Young and the Indians. And then he called me in for a second interview, which I thought was a little excessive for a research assistant job, but okay. And as I went into the interview, he actually told me, what we're actually working on is the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Mm-hmm. And I would like you to be my research assistant, but you need to know what you're getting yourself into.
Interesting.
And I needed a job at that point. So I wasn't particularly enthralled with Mountain Meadows. I don't know how much I knew about it at that time. It's hard for me to go back to that place. But he said, I want you, you need to pray about this. This is a hard thing. And are you, can you do this? And I needed a job and I took it, and I felt like it was the right thing for me to do. But for the first several months, I was just reading newspapers from the 1870s and these accounts, and I was physically nauseated all the time. And on top of that, they hadn't announced the project publicly yet, and I wasn't supposed to talk about it. And that was a weighty burden. And so I was trying to, and I could talk to the people who were working on the project, which certainly helped. But I've spent more than a decade of my life working on Mountain Meadows, and which I think is the darkest moment in church history, and it was not easy. It wasn't easy. After a time, I was able to kind of focus more on politically what's going on and legally what's going on, and I'm general editor of the legal papers, and so I was more focused on kind of that aspect of it, which was much more manageable. But Rick Turley, who I worked for Ron Walker for about 6 months, and then he had told me that's how long the job was going to be, and I was still going to have a few months before I went to Vanderbilt in the next fall. And so I'd lined up another job, but you can't write a book in 6 months. They were ridiculous to think that they could. And it wasn't done. And I felt really strongly at that time that I wasn't done with Mountain Meadows. And Ron kind of said, well, you can't do both of these jobs, and I'm going to have to replace you when you're gone anyway. So why don't you go to do this job that you've committed to and do it well this summer? And I was really mad at him because I didn't feel like I was done with Mountain Meadows, and which was right. I came back. I went to Vanderbilt. I went to Divinity School, and then came back and got a job working for Rick Turley on the John D. Lee has two trials leading up to his execution for the Mountain Meadows Massacre, and I worked on that. So for a decade, my life rotated around the Mountain Meadows Massacre.
Well, and like you said, that's pretty dark, and there are people maybe who they didn't know there was anything that might be labeled that way in church history. when you talked about how difficult that was, personally, how did you keep going? Because some people might ask you, why keep going? Why not just study something else? Why stick with the church? And why stick with those topics? How were you able to keep going?
I think that Rick and I had a really important conversation at one point, and he said, you know, before he approached this project, before he kind of pitched it to the brethren, he felt like, okay, I need to be okay with whatever the worst outcome is here.
Yeah.
In his mind, the worst outcome was if Brigham Young ordered the massacre. And I still think that's probably the worst outcome. And he said, and I had to be, if I had to be able to be okay with the worst outcome. And he said, once I realized that the church was still true, even if something really, I mean, it's horrific enough what happened, but even if this worst possible thing happened. And then he said, then I could go forward and know that I could be completely honest with this. And I think that that was a really important lesson for me as a historian, that because I want to be balanced and I want to be complete. And I think philosophically, I think the best way for us to deal with difficult things is to approach them head on and to learn everything we can about it. We always have to have a humility there. We're not going to know everything. But when we approach it head on and when we can learn as much as we can about something, I think that we're able to deal with it. It's when we assume we know what happened,
right?
Or when we don't do the work to really learn as much as we can. I think that that's where the problems come. Rick also once, and actually I'm not sure if he or Elder Jensen, Marlon K. Jensen, said this first, but whomever said it first said, the problem isn't church history. The problem is not reading enough church history. Mm-hmm. And some of the most faithful, believing people I know are historians. And people ask, how does that work when history is messy? And real people's lives are messy. That's just a reality. No one's life happens in nice little neat boxes, no matter how perfect you appear to everybody else. Life is messy. But when we just know bits and pieces, we maybe just see the bad parts. But if you're really focused and your life is focused on understanding this, you can't see the bad without seeing all the good. And I cannot, there are things that I don't understand. And there are things that I do believe we have better answers, but we don't have, and it would be arrogant, I think, to say that we have all the answers. Nobody, no mortal has all the answers. But we do have, when we do the work, there are better answers when we're looking at, when we have better sources and when we're trying to look at the complete picture. But along with the bad comes all of this good. And I cannot negate all of that good. And I see people with messy lives and people who sometimes make the wrong call and do the wrong thing. But I actually have an opportunity to learn from that. Mm. And maybe I won't fall into that same thing. There are plenty of other things that I'm going to fall with and that I'm going to mess up with. But I think the more that we know, the more I think we have to be more humble about it and recognize, A, just there is a chasm of things that I don't understand. But I also think that sometimes that helps us to focus on what we do know and what we do understand. And I know that the Spirit has spoken to me. And I know that the Spirit has made an imprint on my heart. And I have to also trust that the gospel is strong enough for other people to work through those things for themselves. I think sometimes we want to kind of compel people to believe. And that's never going to work.
Right. But it's such a good point. I mean, if part of the messiness includes us trying to force people and compel people, that won't turn out well for anyone. So let me ask you the question then, if someone is struggling with particularly church history and the messiness, where would you tell them to go to learn more, first of all, and then how would you help them focus on the good?
So I think the Gospel Topics essays are a really important resource that we have now. They're way underused. The number of students that I have that have no idea what the Gospel Topics and essays
just
are.
Tell people where they can find them.
So
just
if we go to
they don't know. Yeah.
It's not LDS.org anymore. When we go to the Church
of Jesus Christ,
it's not that either. It's Church of Jesus Christ. You go to that, you get the Hedrickites, not the Hedrickites. You get another group. It's difficult.
Go to the church website.
Go to the church website. And if you look under Gospel Topics, every once in a while they change this a little bit, but go under Gospel Topics. And then under Gospel Study, there is a section. Under Gospel Study, there's a section on Gospel Topics. There's also a section on church history. Gospel Topics, so in that whole section, there's a paragraph on atonement. It's not particularly illuminating.
Expensive, yeah.
But there are 13 essays on historical topics that were written by historians who are experts and then vetted by the whole Quorum of the 12 and the First Presidency. Yeah. So this is not just one dude's thoughts on this topic. This is something that has gone through a rigorous vetting process. And read those essays and go to the footnotes and read the sources in the footnotes.
Yeah.
But I would also say, go in conjunction with that, go to the church history website. And I used to work for the church history department, but to offer a plug, they have done this amazing work to gather together these narratives from church history, from the 19th century, but also from the 20th century, from the church as it's expanding internationally. And I think that as we read, we don't just focus on the problem, but we also try to learn more just in general.
Yeah.
Then we begin to see all of that good. I cannot negate the difficulties that many of the early saints went through. And I don't want to dismiss their voices and trying to understand their experience. But I also believe that as we understand them better and in a more complete, not just this kind of caricature, this person we put up on a pedestal, pedestals are useless to me. Nobody can do anything on a pedestal. You can just look pretty. Like, that's it. Historical figure. People can't do stuff on pedestals. And we're agents, and we are meant to act. And real people's lives, when we act, sometimes that gets messy.
Yeah.
But the more, when we put in that time and we work, believe work is an eternal principle, but we're blessed. And we are able to, I think, more fully, I think the grace reaches out to us sometimes before we've done any work. But it can change us. If we want to know and we want to feel settled about hard questions, I don't have all of the answers. But I have enough that I'm okay. And that I can feel peace. Things are still gonna be complicated. And some of that messiness isn't gonna go until mortality is done.
Yeah,
but if we're willing to put in some work, we can have better answers, and
yeah.
I think that we can access that peace that is available to us.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much, and it's so nice to know that as we reach out to God, He'll reach out to us, even if it takes time, even if it's a last minute answer. That he can help the messiness have some grace in it, and as we focus on him, he can help us get through that. So You're such a good example of that. Thank you so much for sharing your story. That was very helpful. Thanks.